Welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Delighted to have you with us today. Got a very special guest and probably our most popular guest in any show we do, Tammy Flanagan. She is a benefits expert extraordinaire and been there, done that, got the T-shirt, been in government, been with the National Institutes of Transition Planning, does some consulting on her own, and it's just a treat to have you here, Tammy. By the way, you look wonderful. Obviously, you've retired or you're phasing into retirement.
Well, yeah, we've heard that federal employees are waiting to be allowed to go into phased retirement, so that's what I've decided to do. I've been at this, as you said, for about 30 years now. We've known each other about most of that time. And my husband retired. He's a federal worker for 34 years, and he took the plunge and went into retirement in January. And we bought a home in Florida, so I split my time now between Virginia and Florida. But the time I'm in Florida is a very laid-back feeling. It's nice. I mean, the retirement is really all that it is cracked up to be. I think it is.
Well, you said something I thought was really revealing at lunch today. You said your husband, now that he's retired, he's the guy you knew in high school.
That's right. Yeah, we actually, one of those rare couples that stayed together from high school all the way through, you know, thick and thin. When we met, of course, you know, what cares do you have in high school?
Sure.
We were carefree. And it's like that same feeling. It's like freedom and like school's out and we're having fun. And I really do think that retirement for some people is that feeling. I mean, I don't live in, I never thought I'd be one of those Florida people, you know, where you go to Florida and you just kind of go there and live out your years. That's not the feeling. It's a feeling of vibrancy and life, and there's so much to do, and this whole new chapter of life is opening up. And it's really what I thought it would be. It's kind of a pleasant surprise. So it makes me want to phase into retirement even more, but I do enjoy my work as well.
Well,
so
the first time I saw you after you had, quote, semi-retired, moved to Florida, and you came back and you looked wonderful. You had a tan and you looked relaxed. And I said something to you, and you said one difference, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but one difference was D.C. people who retire to D.C. are one thing. People who retire and go to Florida, they go there to have fun.
That's right. Yeah, I've known, and I know this is a little stereotypical, and I'm not trying to do that, but where I live here in Virginia, I do live in a retirement community, an over 55. We bought a condo so that we'd have a little home base, so when I do come up here to work, I don't have to stay in a hotel. But that community is a lot of retirees, not all federal, you know, all different types of careers that they had, but I feel like they still want that schedule. They still want that meeting to go to, and we do have a lot of meetings. Where in Florida, it's not that feeling. It's more of like, what are we going to do this weekend to have fun? Are we going to go down to Key West, or we're going to go help out at the homeless shelter? I have a friend of mine that she works at the North Pole, is what she calls it. So all year long, they go and they refurbish toys. They'll take wooden cradles and paint them, and they get doll babies. And at Christmas time for the poor kids, you know, or the homeless people, they come in there and they can give these beautiful gifts to their children. So it's not that we're just sitting back and having margaritas every night, but it's a different way of life. It's just a nice feeling. It's just it's fun. Yeah, it's fun. It really is.
I got a Facebook notice from the former station manager for WTOP, Jim Farley. Wonderful guy. He was here forever. He retired, it seemed to me, early or young, but it was a picture of him in Florida where he lives now, and he was holding up a Marlin or a Mako or something. And I thought, this guy does not look like he misses work and
well,
the
you
weather.
Know what? I think you just made a good point. Retire early. Because if you do work until your health gives out, then it's not going to be the same experience. Or if you're taking care of a family member, that's a whole different experience as well. So I think retirement is not going to be that experience of carefree for everybody. And I do understand that, you know, fortunately at this stage in our life, you know, both of our parents have passed away. And so we're not in the caregiving role. But enjoy it while you can, right?
Yeah.
If you can afford to. You know, the money comes part of that, but part of it and a lot of it's psychological.
Yeah.
To make sure
well,
you're
this
ready.
This phased retirement, it's legal, it's out there, but nobody is doing it yet.
Right.
I haven't seen any agency that's announced it. And it's almost as if somebody's waiting for somebody to start it.
That's exactly
Is it, based on what you know, is it possible that it might be different at VA than it is at Justice? Or could it be agency specific?
Exactly. Yeah. The phased retirement law was passed in 2012. And after the law was passed, then we had to come up with the rules. You know, how is it actually going to work? So part of that rules making was through OPM. They had to develop forms because this is a whole new way to retire. It really is the biggest change in retirement since 1920. It's a whole different thing. So OPM came up with the rules. They came up with the form. So they're ready. Like, they can accept a phased retirement application now and actually process it. So that was in November of 2014 that was done. So now it's in the agency's hands. And the agencies have a role in this because they have to develop their own specific guidance. So one agency might say, we'll let people be phased retirees for 2 years. Another one might say, we're not going to limit it. Another one was going to have the definition of mentoring, because part of phased retirement is your role is to mentor the next generation of workers. And each agency may have a different definition of what that means to them. So that's what's the process going on right now. And I would think it's going to be like DOD is going to say, this is what overall our guidance is. And then the agencies under DOD, like DOD IG or NSA, who kind of follows DOD, then they're going to come up with their specific guidance. So we're in that stage, I think, of the overall picture being developed. So for the actual employee who wants to go into phased retirement, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know if it's going to happen next month or if it's still going to be another year away. It depends on how long it takes the agencies to really fine-tune that guidance. And I think once you ring the bell, it's going to be really hard to unring it. So I think there's justification in taking time from the agency's point of view to make sure this is going to work and be to the benefit of the government, as in addition to a benefit to the employee who wants to phase or ease into retirement.
Okay, so this is not a game. This is really serious stuff for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely, because the agencies are saying, what's in it for us? You know, if we're going to let our employees retire and then come back 20 hours a week, how does that benefit us to let that happen? And then from the employee, they're even trying to figure out what's in it for me, because I could retire and then go back to work someplace else and not have this phased business. So why would I want to become a phased retiree? So there's a lot of learning that has to go on. There's a lot of rulemaking that still has to happen to make sure, with such a large workforce, when you're managing 2 million people in the government, you want to make sure when you roll out something this new and this different that it's going to work.
Well, I would think, too, that some of the winners, the potential winners for this, are not people you think of, not the retiree, not the agency hiring officer, not the one in charge of the mission, but the younger and mid-career employees who are going to get mentored and in some cases move up by making it easier for people to retire.
Right, especially when you see that opening coming.
Yeah.
So now this employee is actually phasing into retirement. They're planning their next step. So now the employees who are going to work into those steps actually see that future with where they may not leave or they may not give up hope. So I think that would be a real benefit to the agency, but who am I to say?
Well, you were on Bob Lyons for your benefit show earlier this week, Monday, and there was an expert there,
a recruiting specialist.
Yep. Very impressive lady. I'm going to get her as a guest, too.
Absolutely.
But she said some really interesting things, and one of them was get out of government early.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that, too, because I see so many people, because we do a lot of pre-retirement seminars where people are retiring from federal service, not resigning. But she was saying that a lot of the people she counsels on recruiting and working in the private sector, it's that you want to get out when you're young enough to be marketable and that you still have a career ahead of you, not where you're just trying to fill in the next 10 years till you can get Social Security. So she was saying she really likes to find people who are taking an early out, or law enforcement folks who can retire as early as age 50. Those are the easiest ones to place because from the corporation standpoint, they see that you might be with them 10 or 15 or even 20 years versus somebody who's coming out at 60 or 62 who they might have to train them and only have them for 5 years.
I think she was telling you that she loves CIA people, particularly if they've only had 5 or 6 years of service, because they've gone to some of the finest schools in the country. They've had superb training by any standard. They've got these great security
clearances. They've been polygraphed,
exactly. And they're just gold. And
they're
she said she
employees.
Can place them easily.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's going to be a tough call from the employee's perspective, because I think a lot of those employees love their careers. Mm-hmm. When I go to the CIA to talk about retirement to both mid-career and pre-retirees, there's this loyalty and this pride in working for that agency. They like the work that they do. They love it. They feel secure in it. And I think that's one agency, because they have those special retirement provisions, that doesn't have problems retaining employees for a 20-year period. If I was the employee, I'd have a hard time saying, you're going to have to offer me an awful lot to go into the private sector to give up that career. Because I think there's some loyalty to that agency, which there should be.
I want to build on that. We need to take a short break here, but we'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us. My guest today is Tammy Flanagan. She's very well known in the federal community, works for the National Institutes of Transition Planning. She's probably been at your federal agency to do a pre-retirement seminar. Tammy, you write a column for Government Executive, which mm-hmm. is excellent. Read it every time you do it.
Yes, I'm thinking of mentoring. You were my mentor for
that. Good. All right. I'm proud of that. One of the favorite subjects, and I think when people think of this, they think of you, is the best day to retire. And that's something that's like somebody says, I want to read your horoscope. Even if you don't believe in it, you think, well, okay, what's in it for Aquarius this week? And the best day to retire, it's sort of a movable feast, isn't it?
Yeah, and I know we've been talking about, in fact, I'll give you credit for that mm-hmm. probably more than me, because you were the one that came to me, I don't know what year it was, 1990 mm-hmm. or 92, and you said you heard that there was this secret date that yeah. that FBI employees use to retire, yeah. and I was one of the ones who had left the Bureau from HR, and I knew how we counseled our employees on choosing a retirement date. Now, if we go back to that era, back in the 90s, where the majority, if not all the retirees were coming out CSRS,
yeah.
there is a much more defined best date to retire, because your whole retirement was one check.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
today, and I'm even starting to think about this differently as well, because FERS employees are now retiring. In fact, a lot of the retirements today are under the Federal Employees Retirement System. So these employees in many cases will come out with three checks. They're going to be getting their FERS retirement benefit, and the advice on choosing the best date to retire is pretty much what we've been saying mm-hmm. for that. But they might also be old enough to collect Social Security, and they might also want and need to take money out of their TSP account. So the best date for Social Security, the best date for TSP may not be necessarily the best date to claim your FERS retirement. So today I'm almost thinking we need to talk about three different dates,
yeah.
and then it gets a whole lot more complicated. But if we talk just about the government pension, the FERS yeah. retirement or the CSRS retirement, we can still say that the last day of the month is always a good time to retire. And that's because you work that last month and get paid your salary, and your retirement's going to commence or start to pay mm-hmm. you a benefit the first day of the following month. So why not get paid up until the last day before that first retirement check comes in? So the end of the month is always good. Now, the first 3 days of the month, for those of the federal employees who are still covered under CSRS, there's always been, at least for many, many years, there's been this 3-day grace period every month. And only CSRS employees have it. The FERS employees would not want to do this. But a civil service employee could retire on the first, second, or third day of the month. And sometimes that might be a Friday at the end of a 2-week leave period. So if they can not only gauge their retirement at the end of the month or possibly at the first 3 days of the month, their retirement will still begin paying them benefits the next day. And then this way they can work perhaps till the end of the leave period and earn their last leave accrual. 8 hours of annual leave is 8 hours your hourly pay rate paid to you in a lump sum. So they can kind of maximize their lump sum leave check for that, you know, benefit. And then the third thing we've always said was think about the end of the year.
Yeah.
And the end of the year has always been that magic date. Yep. It's like when all the stars line up, mm-hmm. because now you can go the end of the year, the end of the month. If you're CSRS, you might even be able to go the first 3 days of the month. And what's so nice about the end of the calendar year, aligning with the end of the leave year, is that now you get paid for your annual leave in the next tax year, because taxes go January through December. So if you retire on December 31st, or even January 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, your agency is going to pay out your accumulated lump sum payment of annual leave, which might be not just the 240 that you've carried over year after year, but if that last year that you work, you knew you were going to retire, so you didn't take any annual leave,
mm-hmm.
now you might have saved up another 200 hours. So that lump sum leave check could be like a design your own buyout. It could be worth 440 hours. So I've seen lump sum annual leave checks in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $30,000 for some high salaried employees. So that's a nice cushion for when you first go into retirement and you're saying, okay, you know, when's my first retirement check going to come? What am I going to do with my TSP? Am I really going to take Social Security, or am I going to go back to work? So while you're waiting for all the dust to settle, you've got that money that just came from your agency that kind of cushions the first few months of retirement while you're deciding what else to do.
Right. And then there's tax implications too.
Yeah. If you worked that whole last year, you certainly don't want to add another $30,000 of taxable yeah. income to your already high income. So if you're going to truly be retired and now your income is going to be a little less than it was last year, that might be the year you want to add in that $20,000 or $30,000 lump sum leave check.
And one more thing, too, in case there is a pay raise that year, much of your lump sum annual leave, not all, but much of it will be paid at the higher rate.
Exactly. I credit you and I for that because I remember one year we wrote about that in your column in the Federal Diary back in the day. And that following year, there were some new regulations put out letting agencies know that they should be doing that. And some agencies weren't.
That's right. They weren't. That's
right. They weren't. Yeah. So what we're saying here is that if you cash out your leave, let's say on December 31st, you decide to retire. And that following January 10th or whatever the new leave year is, let's say Congress grants and the president signs a 3% pay increase, which hasn't happened for a while, but maybe. So if that pay increase goes into effect, even though you already retired, the value of your annual leave that would have carried you past that date is going to be paid at that 3% higher rate. So the way that the payroll offices have to pay out your unused annual leave is to whatever salary you would have been earning if you could have taken the leave. So if you have 400 hours of leave, it would have carried you well past that January 10th date. So all of that extra leave is going to be paid at a 3% higher rate, which can be significant if you're cashing in a lot of leave.
Yeah, you're turning in a lot of that.
And
yeah.
If there's a big pay raise.
Yeah.
If there's a 0% pay raise, don't worry about it.
Well, there is one proposal out there. It's with the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and they have proposed a 4% pay raise. Now, don't spend it. Don't hold your breath, but they're...
That's true. It is
out there.
We can always have hope. That's
it
right. Stay optimistic.
Yeah. Tammy, when you... and you've been talking to groups for years, pre-retirement groups, mid-career groups, whatnot. Is there something that most of them don't know? One thing, and I answer my own question here. Somebody once told me that the NIH, while it has a wonderful personnel operation, a wonderful HR operation, and they do a bang-up job helping their people, but that nobody out there knows anything because they're so busy with their jobs that some of them don't even know they have sick leave.
That's right.
Have you found that?
Well, yeah, it depends on what stage of the career somebody is in. Mm-hmm. What really surprises me in recent years is because now, like I said, almost everybody in the government's covered under FERS. When I'll do a mid-career class, maybe people have 10 years on the job already, sometimes 15 or 20. And, you know, the whole morning of that seminar, I'm really telling them about their basic government pension, the FERS basic benefit. And I've had people on more than a couple of occasions who will come up to me at the lunch break and they'll look at me real funny and they'll say, what were you talking about this morning? It really didn't sound like the TSP and you weren't talking about the C fund or anything.
Which it wasn't.
I wasn't. I was talking about your government pension. And they're like, we have a pension?
Yeah.
Really? And I think the reason why that's a mystery to some employees who haven't been watching HR memos that come out is because, number one, if you look at your paycheck as a federal employee, the smallest withholding is FERS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for most federal employees, it's 0.8%.
Yeah.
It's not that 7% we used to pay into CSRS. So that's one thing. They don't see much being withheld. So therefore, what could that be worth?
Yeah.
And I think the second reason is because we do focus so much attention on investing and saving for retirement, which we should with the TSP, because that is a big part of FERS, but it's not the only part of FERS. You know, when we say federal employees retirement system, we're really talking about three different agencies.
Yeah.
We're talking about OPM, the Office of Personnel Management that administers that FERS pension or FERS retirement. Then we're also talking about Social Security Administration, because a cornerstone of FERS is the fact that we pay into Social Security. And then the third level is the probably the most well-known or the most best part most people think about FERS is the Thrift Savings Plan, because we're saving and we're getting matching and we're getting a tax break. And so we focus on that. But that's a whole separate agency. You know, we've had the Thrift Board, and every weekly some you guys have people from the TSP here to talk about, you know, how it's going and what's happening. So there's really those three different pieces. It's a three-legged stool, just like the old pension plans from the 1970s and 80s used to be. We still have that in the government, which
right.
is nice.
And these are about as good as they get as far as being safe, you know, Rock of Gibraltar type safe. You know,
yeah,
the federal annuity, you know, is guaranteed by the government, Social Security guaranteed by the government, and then the Thrift Savings Plan. If you're FERS, you've been entitled to a 5% match from the government, a 5% tax deferred pay raise forever, and that can really add up.
Right. Like in the private sector, you hear people worried that their pension plan might go belly up, or that somebody's mismanaging their pension funds.
Yeah.
Well, we don't see that as much in the government.
Yeah.
If anybody's mismanaging your pension funds, it's you.
Yeah.
Because you're taking money out of the C fund when it's, you know, low or high, or you're buying high, selling low. But other than that, it's pretty well managed.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the sanctity of pensions. We'll take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Tammy Flanagan, a benefits expert extraordinaire. She works with the National Institutes of Transition Planning. She writes a regular column for Government Exec magazine, and she does a counseling on her own and around the country. And Tammy, if you missed the first part of the show, Tammy recently retired to Florida. And Tammy, I've known her 30 years. She is a beautiful woman. She looks better now than she did a week before she retired, and she credits it to what, relaxing a little bit in Florida?
It's just fun. I mean, I'm watching my husband and really enjoying watching him enjoy his first months of retirement, where he's just seems to be losing all that stress of the traffic, because the one thing he really didn't like about living in D.C. was the traffic, and we're known for high traffic here. He doesn't miss that at all. He doesn't miss the day-to-day stress of, you know, the job. He had a pretty stressful job, as most government employees do. So that's all kind of fallen away, and he's just becoming back to his self, and I love to see that.
Yeah, I love that you said it. You said at lunch that he's the guy you knew in high school.
That's right. Yeah, he really has come back to that carefree spirit. Uh-huh. You know, he's looking forward to going to the drag races Saturday night, and you know, looking forward to taking a 1-day vacation where we'll go over to Siesta Key Beach and spend the day on the beach, and we come home at night and cook out, and it's just fun.
Sounds good.
It's that honeymoon period. So I don't want anyone to think this is going to be the next 30 years.
Yeah.
Hopefully we have 30 years, but at least for these first months, we're just kind of settling into this new lifestyle.
Well, you made a really good point, too. I mean, some of these are obvious when you think about it, but you said don't wait too long because in retirement, you want to be healthy. And so,
I worry about that with a lot of people I meet, because I still do run into people with 45 years, 55 years of federal service, and this is all they've ever known. And I think that the whole prospect of retirement is kind of scary to some people. They don't know what they're going to do with their time. They haven't really developed any kind of activities outside of their federal career. This is where they're valid. You know, this is where they have their sense of worth. And so maybe there's not everybody is designed to retire to relax or to find that new reinvention of themselves. But I do hope that a lot of people don't wait too long to retire.
Right. And there again, this is what you were talking about, phased retirement, the first half of the show. And you said that it's very likely that defense, for instance, will come out and say, okay, we're going to do phased retirement, but they'll let the Defense Logistics Agency do it one way and the DISA do it another and NSA do it another way. You think that is likely?
Well, each agency does have some leeway as far as setting the guidelines. There's a certain guidance that's in the law that, you know, certain people can and can't do phased retirement by law. Like if you're a law enforcement officer, for instance, and you're subject to mandatory retirement, you're not going to even be able to do phased retirement. But within the people who can do it, the agencies can decide how what are we going to do if 10 people in the same office want to go into phased retirement? We're going to have to rank it somehow that we'll let three of them do it and the other seven, you know, sorry. So how are we going to set up that guideline? You know, how are we going to define what mentoring is? Because part of phased retirement means you've got to mentor 20% of the time.
Yeah.
So what does that really look like?
If I take phased retirement and I work 20 hours a week, half the week, and it can go for a couple of years. How do I get paid for that?
Yeah, so when a person decides, and when it's available, it's not yet, but when a person does move into phased retirement, they're actually going to retire. They're going to put in their phased retirement application as opposed to a full retirement application, and OPM will process that retirement and pay them 50% of their earned FERS or CSRS annuity. So they will get a retirement check from OPM. But at the same time, next Monday, they're going to come back to work. And they'll get a paycheck just like they always did from their agency. But now it's going to be for 20 hours a week rather than 40 hours a week. So they're only going to be allowed to work 20 hours a week. And this is going to be a 50-50 proposition to start with. So you can't do 80-20 or 60-40. It's going to be 50-50. So you get your paycheck, you'll still accrue leave, but your leave is going to be half of what you accrued when you were full time because you're working half the hours. You're still an employee when it comes to TSP, which means you can still contribute the full amount if you want to. You'll get the matching if you're FERS on 5% of your salary, which is now 50% of your salary. And you can still borrow from your thrift. You're not going to take withdrawals because you're still an employee. You'll still accumulate Social Security because you're still paying into it. So for all intents and purposes, you're still an employee, but you're getting part of a retirement check. Now, when this whole thing finishes, let's say you do it for 2 or 3 years, that time you spent in phased retirement is going to get added to your length of service. Your sick leave now gets added in. Now is when you make your survivor benefit elections. So now you're going to fully retire. So now that first half of your retirement gets added to the second more generous half because it now benefits from all that extra service. And now you go into full retirement. And then you can start your TSP and Social Security if you want.
My old uncle used to have a saying about people who are never happy about anything. And he said that's the kind of guy that would complain if you hanged him with old rope.
That's
you
right.
Know, and
that's
I think
right.
It's a great
Some people
line.
Are going to complain no matter
right.
what about
and
this.
And I had people say, well, what's in it for me with this phased retirement? In that they lose money, they quote, lose money because they're being paid half the time as a retiree. But it's a win-win, isn't it? If you want it.
I think it's a win-win. Now, what I've heard also people say about this kind of negatively, they're like, well, why wouldn't somebody just retire and go back to work? Go work full time someplace. That's true. That would be more money. You know, get your full retirement, get another full paycheck, but not everybody wants to have a second career. What I think is the beauty of phased retirement, it's like anything else. I always compare it to, now that I'm living by the ocean, is to wading into the water rather than jumping in feet first. So this way you can kind of ease into your retirement years and make sure this is what you want. And there's a safety valve on phased retirement to say that if you don't like it, you can go back full time.
Did not realize
that.
Yeah,
so it's a mutually exclusive, agreeable thing that you and the agency can say, okay, you know, you can go back on full time. You can leave phased retirement. So there is a safety net that says that if this isn't for you and you've made a big mistake, that you can return to full time work.
You mentioned before the issue of mentoring and the law clearly states that people have to spend at least 20% of their time mentoring people. Of course, the obvious question is, what's mentoring?
Yeah, that's what I'd like to know.
Yeah.
So I hear this from a lot of employees. They say, well, we're already mentoring because we're nearing retirement. We're hiring new people. So we have to mentor as part of our job. So the question is, what's going to be different or how much more deliberate is that going to be? You know, how's that really going to look as we have some employees who might decide to phase into retirement? So I think that's the type of thing that I'm hoping that the government people who are making these rules are sitting around talking about to say how we're going to define this for our agency.
Right. And again, as you pointed out, it could be tailor-made to a specific agency. Mentoring could mean one thing at Interior and another at OPM.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You made the point that most people retiring now many people retiring now are under the newer FERS system, and eventually they'll all be under the FERS system. And it's a different picking the best date, which is simple if you're CSRS, is not quite as simple if you're FERS, particularly if you're playing all the angles.
Right. And depending on what you plan to do afterwards, because I think when we think of retirement, or at least what we used to think of retirement, is that we would collect our federal benefits. It would just be
one
there,
check.
And then we could go work in the private sector, and then would have another paycheck.
Yeah.
But it's different for FERS, because we can collect our FERS retirement, but that's only, for most employees, about a third of what they're going to get. So you won't necessarily take money out of your TSP if you're going to start a second career, because you just simply don't need it. So but the beauty of that is now your TSP can sit there for another 10 years and hopefully grow. It could even double in 10 years, depending on what the markets do. So it's not that you're not using it. You're still investing. You're still managing that money. You're just not adding to your thrift. You're adding to a 401k.
Well, I've heard many people say that the best case scenario is that you don't need the TSP at all. And the only time you touch it is when the IRS says there's a required minimum distribution, and it's 4%, or it's not much, and your TSP account could continue to grow where you don't have a problem.
Yeah, and I've seen
inflation.
People with kind of that problem.
Yeah,
you know, they'll
good
call
problem.
It a problem. They'll be
good
like,
problem.
Well, now I got to take TSP money, and I'm getting this Social Security check, and I got to pay all these taxes. Like paying taxes is a sign that you're making money.
Absolutely.
So I think that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Very good. Actually, I want to take a short break here at federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Tammy Flanagan, columnist for Government Executive Magazine, a guest many times on this show. She appears on the National Institute of Transition Planning's For Your Benefit, which is every Monday. And she is phasing into retirement, has a home here in Virginia, Northern Virginia, and lives in Florida as well. And her husband recently retired from the government. And she said, so far, really so good. Huh?
Yeah. It's now it's nice, too, that we can do it this way where my husband is fully retired. And that mm-hmm. was his plan probably from the day he started working for mm-hmm. the government. He wanted to retire at a young age because I think in his case, his dad passed away at 64 and mm-hmm. never got to retire. So yeah. I think it's always been in the back of his mind because he died a year after we got married. Mm-hmm. But in my case, I've kind of built up my career to where right now I feel like I'm loving my yeah. career. So I'm not ready to fully retire. I like what I do. I enjoy talking to people and helping people understand their benefits. So it's nice whenever one spouse can retire and do what they want and the other one can kind of do their thing as well. So I'm, as you said, I'm phasing into retirement, trying to slow down a little bit, spend more time with him because he's enjoying that mm-hmm. time. And I frankly would like to enjoy it more too. But on the other hand, I can still work. And so I think I wonder, kind of myself, I wonder how a couple who both retires on the same day yeah. managing. I think that would be a little more difficult because maybe my idea of retirement's different than his or vice versa. So this way we're kind of easing into it and kind of feeling each other out as far as what we envision our retirement years to look like. So it's kind of fun.
I used to know a retirement counselor in a private sector, but he handled people's finances and whatnot. And he said he would always tell them, and he made it tilted in favor of the women, but he said he would tell the woman, he said, you're about to have twice the husband and half the income.
Yeah.
And when you talk about both retiring on the same day, that could be a culture shock, huh?
Yeah, one of these days we should probably have a psychologist come uh-huh. on who counsels people who are retiring, because I know that we see this happen, and I'm not a psychologist, and I don't know these statistics, but you see sometimes when people go into retirement, if it's a married couple, that can be a very stressful time, because especially for someone who might have been a stay-at-home mom or took care of the house, and this is my domain, and now here comes my husband who's been working all these years.
Here's when you should do the dishes.
Yeah, and so that can be difficult.
I'm sure.
I've heard people have that complaint.
I had a friend who was a lieutenant commander on the large aircraft carrier. I can't think mm-hmm. of the name of it, but at the time it was the largest.
Wow.
And he was deployed in the first Gulf War and all that. But he said what would happen normally is these carriers would be on deployment 6-9 months, whatever, and then their replacement would meet them somewhere like around the Azores off of Portugal and Spain, and they would exchange mail. This is snail mail days mm-hmm. still, but they would exchange mail. They would exchange
provisions,
food and
yeah.
and that kind of stuff. And psychiatrists and psychologists.
Oh.
And teams would come aboard the ship that was returning to the States mm-hmm. for that very reason that you
yep.
say.
The reentry into the world.
Well, and you know, you left, you went to war with a 12-year-old. Mm-hmm. A son at home. Now you got a teenager
yep.
and a totally different breed of cat. And your spouse, it's usually the wife, but mm-hmm. your spouse has done
had
a pretty good job
control.
Of running things yep. alone without mm-hmm. you. And suddenly you come in and say that door should be left open and all mm-hmm. this. And I could see it's the stuff of jokes, but it's also very
it's
serious
very
stuff.
Real. Yeah, very real. And the other thing that happens sometimes is marriages fall apart. I've seen uh-huh. a lot of situations where I get emails from people who say, I just retired or my husband just retired and we're going through a divorce.
Yeah.
And I think with our family, I'm not to say this is what everybody should do, but since I've worked in this field of retirement, we've talked about retirement mm-hmm. for 35 years. I think talking about our vision of what it's going to look like has really helped us not be surprised. Like I knew he wanted to retire and mm-hmm. I knew he didn't want to do anything right away. And I'm letting him do that because I know there's going to come a time when he's going to wake up and say, my to-do list is done and mm-hmm. this one day vacation is getting old and then he'll move on and do something else. But for right now, I'm just enjoying watching him enjoy himself.
Well, this same financial planner said that on a couple of occasions, he'd have a husband and wife in and telling them about their finances and all of this sort of thing. And he said the man would announce what they were going to do. And mm-hmm. I remember in one case, they were going to move to Florida, buy a boat, and maybe take charters out, but he was going to fish all the time. And he said the wife looked at him and her husband, she'd never seen either one of them. Had never discussed it.
It was in his mind, but he never vocalized it.
But that happens.
Huh? It does happen. Yeah, unfortunately. And the other thing that happens for some people, and I think because retirement is one of life's most stressful events, sometimes your health is in shock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've been on this regimen of a schedule, and now you're maybe sleeping in longer, or maybe not eating as well, or whatever. But you do see some people who take a turn for the worse health-wise. So make sure, I think it's a good idea. We do have in some of our seminars, and I always like when the agency puts this in, if they can afford to have a speaker on health and nutrition and mm-hmm. living a long, healthy retirement.
Yeah.
And what does that look like? And what are some of the things you should watch out for? Because I think your health can be affected by these stressful life events, and retirement is a big change in your life.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, you know, we think of it as a Washington disease, but I'm sure it happens in any big mm-hmm. city in the high powered life, but particularly in the government. You know, you're a big deal here. Mm-hmm. Your job is whatever, your assistant secretary of this, or mm-hmm. you're in charge of that. And then one day you go to quote nothing,
right.
Retiree. And I've been at several parties, and I remember back when I was much younger, but it saddened me at the time to see it. And there was an old guy there, and he had been an assistant to the president.
Mm-hmm.
And now he was just there. And when people would ask him what he was doing or who he was, he would take out this beat up old business card, and everything was marked off it.
Yeah.
So it just had his name, or he'd put X this. And it was sad to see, because he lost his identity.
Yeah, and I think that's important to try to avoid that as well. Because, yeah, I'll run into people now, and they're like nice people, they're retirees. And then when you finally find out one day, oh, he's a retired general, really?
Oh, he is?
But he's adapted to that life after retirement. He knows that that title left with his
yeah.
career. So
yeah.
he's just, you know.
The military seems to do a better job of this, and mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's because people know they're punching their ticket, you know, two tours of the Pentagon, one war, mm-hmm. But they're prepared for it. They know they're not going to all be chief of staff.
Right, and I think they know their career has a beginning and mm-hmm. an end.
Yeah, yeah.
With federal employees, for most of them, there's no end that they have to go unless they're subject to mandatory separation. Most of them have an unlimited career. They can work until the day they die.
Mm-hmm.
So without having that plan or a goal set, it's kind of hard to say, this is the day I'm going to go. Like, how do you decide that after 40 years, I'm going to finally retire? I think it's a big decision.
Yeah. Well, and getting back to something you pointed out earlier, in olden days and back in the day, the civil service retirement system, you got one check. It was from the OPM, courtesy of the U.S. Treasury, but mm-hmm. you'd get a monthly check. That was that. Now people retiring from the government get a reduced, drastically reduced civil service benefit because they paid a lot less for mm-hmm. it. They get their thrift savings plan money, whatever that is, in any installment they want,
mm-hmm.
and then they get Social Security. And there are ways with this phased retirement, you keep getting Social Security, you keep getting retirement credit, you keep putting money in the TSP,
mm-hmm.
and you're eligible for that all-important 5% government match. And, you know, that thing, people have it, seem to me, often to take it for granted, but it is huge.
It is a
5% tax-deferred pay raise forever. And as your income goes up, that 5% goes up. And it's just, I noticed doing a piece about the thrift savings plan, the account balances, you know, we're always looking for who are the TSP millionaires mm-hmm. and all that. And the number's growing.
Oh,
and
yes.
At first, it was just rich lawyers and rich doctors who
brought
money with them. Yeah, they came into government, federal judges and that sort.
Yeah.
Now it's homegrown.
I meet them every day.
I've talked to several, mm-hmm. and several have said, this is how I did it. And what interested me was that although the CSRS people are obviously much older and may presumably in better, higher grades and whatnot, the average amount of the money in a TSP account is almost dollar for dollar equal between CSRS and FERS.
Right. But I think it's important to say something else there, because I don't want anyone who doesn't have $1 million
mm-hmm.
to feel like they should.
Absolutely.
Because I always tell this to my classes, especially FERS employees, that if you understand nothing else about Social Security, understand that it was designed to be a tilted system. It was designed to provide more to those who earn less and less to those who earn more. So let's say you have spent your career, you've 35 mm-hmm. years, but you're a GS-7.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't even make enough money to put that full contribution to the TSP, and you don't have anywhere near $1 million. That's okay, because you're going to retire with a Social Security check that's going to replace possibly 40 to 50% of your pay, along with a FERS check that replaces another 35 to 40% of your pay, there's 80% right there. That's enough to retire on without a dime in your TSP account.
Yeah.
So for a lower salaried employee, they can live, as you mentioned before, you said, I think it might have slipped by some people, that you can possibly live on your FERS and your Social Security without touching the thrift. The thrift should be for everything else, and for when the car breaks down or for when you want to take a vacation or you want to put in a new refrigerator, then you can draw from those savings. So it's nice for some people that they don't have to rely on the TSP to live. But if you're a higher salaried employee and you've gotten used to living on $165,000 a year and your Social Security now is only going to replace 25% of it and your FERS might be another 30%, now you're looking at 55% replacement, you're going to have to start using your investment money. You better have $1 million in there.
Tammy, listen, I want to thank you for being with us today. This is a very interesting show. Hope people will tell friends about it. We're archived on our homepage. They can listen anytime, and we'll have you back. Thank you, Tammy Flanagan. Have a good week, everyone.